Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey, it's Molly McAleer, and you are listening to Season 4 of Mother, May I Sleep With Podcast.
Hi, it's Malls. This is it, Ann Amish Murder.
Starring
Nev Campbell.
Our goddess.
Starring Max Wyeth, our god.
Our second god. Second goddess to one Nev Campbell. This is, it's going to be a lot of Nev tonight.
And our second season winner was Suburban Madness.
Yay!
So, you know, our girl from Suburban Madness, what was her name?
God, she's bless. Free.
She's free.
She's free.
So everyone out there in our listenership, Nacho Expert Nation, for all of you out there, she's free. So make sure that you guard your husbands.
Yep.
But also pay respect and be respectful. If you're cheating with someone, you
she
might.
She only ran him over, what, like half a dozen times?
She was very, I thought, very sweet to him.
I thought she held back.
I thought she was very sweet as well. So this is a movie that we decided to watch. We were doing a Patreon-only episode just because we are recording without Sammy. And I thought, you know, we did the Anna Nicole episode where you guys got to kind of see a little bit of what a Patreon episode will be like. I'm not sure that we'll be cutting in audio clips to this. I think it's just going to be the two of us. But we chose this movie just because it is Nev Campbell,
which we've always wanted nice things for and continue to do so.
We both love the movie Scream.
Wait, which is your favorite Scream?
Scream 1.
Oh, Scream 2 is mine.
See, okay, so Scream 2 is great. Scream 4, I think, is awesome as well.
The problem I have with Scream 4 is that the hair was so extreme in the first three, it was so boring. Come 2011, there's no red streaks.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, Courtney Cox's hair should have had an Oscar for those movies.
It is true. It is true. And it's also, like, the union of the Cox Arquettes.
Oh, and what a union it was.
I mean, truly, honestly, like, can you imagine just, like, on top of already having whatever emotional and spiritual baggage any one of us that's of a certain age brings into the Scream series.
Yes.
Because it was, like, all of us, like, had a make out to that, or it was, like, the movie that you watched with your crush, or, like, it was the movie that, like, your mom finally let you have a sleepover with, like, the friends that you weren't allowed to hang out with, and we all watched that movie. Like, Scream was very, for my age, I'm 35 now, it was very formative for me. And so was actually Wes Craven as a filmmaker, for sure.
Well, because such an empower, well, the character, and this is, we're getting to an Amish murder, but the character of Sydney is such a badass hero. What I love is all the killers are always saying, you're a victim, and she's never really the, you know, she's the survivor. Oh, it's just so intense.
Well, it's the archetype of all horror movies, and I will say I love Jerry O'Connell in Scream 2.
Oh, yes.
He's great. But my favorite movie—
And Laurie Metcalf, and Jackie is—
Oh, Laurie Metcalf is everything.
And that white suit, which she wears the white linen suit.
I did rewatch Scream 2 recently, and I resaw my favorite movie moment, which was a bunch of guys, right when Jamie Kennedy gets pulled into the van— A bunch of guys with a boombox, yeah. Sort of like skirt. Like
one black guy, two white guys.
Yeah, and they sort of like are doing a little breaky dancey thing with a boombox on the shoulder, which was not relevant to the times, really.
Not at all.
It was this amazing move that they do to completely block. Like, it's as everyone on the quad is so entranced by this boombox movement that no one noticed Jamie Kennedy, actor, big actor of the time.
I want to say Waterboy, but that's not it. Without a Paddle.
Yeah.
Do you remember that film with him and Matthew Lillard?
Yes. And also Jamie Kennedy was he great in, of course, Can't Hardly Wait?
No, Jamie Kennedy's not in that.
Oh, that's Seth Green.
Those two I'm confused by.
You're right. And also, so Jamie Kennedy dated star of The Client List, Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Who is also a great survivor, but not as great as Nev.
It's different. It's different. We're not going to compare them. However, no, we will say they're both Party of Five girls.
Yes. Which, shout out to the reboot, CW.
Bringing it all back. Bringing it all But that said, I will say I love Jamie Kennedy, and I love his chapter in The Day I Shot Cupid, which is Jennifer Love Hewitt's book about relationships. It's really, really good if you are looking for something that's a little bit off the rails, a little bit crazy. It's very interesting. And I do wish Jennifer Love Hewitt, Nev Campbell, I'm sure Nev will be speaking about you a lot more throughout this.
For hours.
All of you, I wish you're great. No, we're not going to do an hours thing.
Oh, on because hours.
Because it's just us. So basically, what we find out through the very beginning of this is this is an Amish murder, okay? Mm.
Set in Ohio.
It's based on a book called Sworn to Silence, which you pointed out to me that this whole movie was allegedly, according to you, a backdoor pilot, which for those of you out there who don't know what it is, it means basically a pilot that was intended to introduce a series. The best example that I can come up of with that is probably 90210, which was a backdoor pilot where it was a 2-hour pilot over one night. They just did like a 2-hour block of 90210. And then I think they ran the next night, the first real episode.
Yeah.
So what is another example of a backdoor pilot for people who don't know?
Like B. Arthur, star of the Golden Girls, as you may or may not know, was first on Maude, was her hit show. But Maude was actually a spinoff of All in the Family.
Okay.
She played Cousin Maude for a very special episode where Maude fights Archie.
Okay.
And then the character of Maude was so beloved, it was just a one-off on the season of All in the Family. It became its own show that ran for 8 years.
Right. So we also have drawn the comparison of like Beverly Hills 90210 leading us into the backdoor pilot for
Isn't Melrose Place a spinoff of 90210? I feel like one of them works.
I do believe that is the case. I know they're both Aaron Spelling shows. I know they're both in Beverly Hills. I can't say that with confidence, but I don't think that that's incorrect. I think it was like Dylan carried them over.
Yeah.
Was it Dylan or Jenny Garth carried them over?
Or I even think Tori Spelling was an intern at one of the office or something, but there is definitely a connection.
Melrose Place is a blind spot for me because it was like they were so adult when I was a child. Like 90210 was already like, oh, I'm watching like the bad kids.
Yeah.
But like when it was like fully Melrose Place, I was like, this is out of control.
Yeah, that's too much.
People need to like dial it in.
Special guest star Heather Locklear for all seasons she appeared, which I would love that title, just special guest star, even if you're a main cast member.
I know.
What a great title.
And then she went on to Spin City and that's where everything kind of fell apart.
No, she had the perfect man after that and then it fell apart.
Okay. Sorry, Heather. So we open up right away on Neve sprinting through Amish country, and we get to see this beautiful view of like...
It's winter.
Mm-hmm. People are doing all the Amish things. They're churning butter. They're fucking smacking bricks with sticks. I don't know what it is they do, but it looks fucking so exhausting and boring.
Yeah, and Neve looks great. She's in black with, I believe, a purple headband.
Right.
And that was was so crazy about this movie. It's very quiet in tones. I mean, if you see a taupe, you should be excited because the colors are so lacking. But Neve always has one or two vibrant color pieces.
She likes a purple.
She loves a purple, which I've always loved people who love purple because it's the sign of royalty.
Yes.
The royals always wear purple. So I feel like you have a sense of self-worth, which so many people don't.
Yes. I have purple right now.
Exactly.
My nails are a little bit jacked right now. I just got them. I don't want to talk about it.
No.
So when you see her running through this thing, you're like, okay. She seems to know that there are Amish people, but she seems very far removed from it. What could her relationship possibly be? Then we find out she gets a little like bloop, bloop. And it turns out that it is there's an issue. They need to all get to a certain place. So we cut to the local police station. The local police station looks like a bed and breakfast.
It looks like a cozy bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. But remember first that man, the police officer.
This was less important to me.
Oh, finding the shoe.
Actually, let's take this back a step. You're right. Okay, so he sees some cows. And the cows come back
at the last second.
Yeah, we have to.
At the last second, he sees them.
Fuck, you're right. So he sees some cows and then he spots like a sporty Mary Jane.
It was very sporty.
It was like, I was like, this is either like, oh, she's like, I'm fucking hiking in a field and I want to look cute. Or it's like, oh, I'm having a Delia's moment and I'm just trying to chunk out this Mary Jane.
Or that was the only thing left. Or that was the only thing left at the, halfway house that her parents took her to buy some shoes.
For sure. So we go to the police station that looks like a bed and breakfast. Find out that the cop found a loose shoe in the road and it concerns him. Should.
Yeah. And pans to the body.
We're not there yet.
Oh, I apologize. There is no body yet.
So He finds, now we see, okay, so now he finds a body.
Now the body has been found.
And it's a young girl stripped down to a nighty type thing, and her skirt is pulled down, and there's bruising on her wrists. So Niamh is the second on the scene, and she runs home, like, right away. They're like, Niamh, you got to get over here, bitch.
Did you notice, like, the jump she did? Either her or the stunt double, where she's on the bottom step and jumps all the way to the top when she's running in the house. That, yeah. I was so impressed. It was like, Niamh, or yeah. Niamh's stunt.
Yeah. So she's like, honey, I've got to, like, I'm not just jogging here today, okay? I'm the chief of police. You might not know this about me yet, but, like, get ready to find out how I became the chief of police. I jump, okay? So she jumps home from her run. She gets her, her little shotgun, pistol. And she, like, to my knowledge, like, I kind of always assume cops are hearing guns, even if they're jogging.
Even if they're not, even if they're not on duty.
Right. So it's nice to know that, like, you might, if you're a cop, you might not have your gun on you when you're jogging. Because, like, who knows?
I think that'd be hard. It would just be heavy.
It seems like an easy discharge, like a wrongful discharge. Yeah, like you know what I mean? But so anyway, so she gets in there. She gets her gun. We find out that she has a new partner right away. And he's like this young black guy that's like sort of like – he's been sent in to do this like sort of comedic role, which I immediately resent. Because, yes, we do need to infuse a little bit of like newness into Amish country. I just felt this was a little on the nose.
First, they had a woman police chief, which I love because that isn't – that's not always – I mean –
sure, it's
and
Neve
then,
Campbell.
Now it's Neve Campbell star. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the black guy playing the trusty.
New sidekick.
New
she
sidekick.
Has no information. Oh, but she also has a. Oh, so,
yeah, she has no information on this guy. I think it's. I want to say Nichols, but it might be Nelson or Neeson. It's an N.
Who knows?
It's an N. Yeah, it might be Norris.
I have no idea.
Anyway, but he, the thing that was so great, so it's him, and then there's this bumbling, like, Barney Fife type, or the guy who finds the shoe is the other, like...
He's very dumb. He's a little Deputy Dewey. We'll call him Deputy Dewey.
Deputy Dewey, too.
Yes, yeah.
And then have we met Mona yet?
Not at all.
Okay, sorry.
Wait, is she the woman in the...
she's the...
Secretary at the bed and breakfast?
Yeah, the secretary at the bed and breakfast. The office assistant at the said bed and breakfast.
Okay, so I wrote her name as Sally throughout most of my notes.
It was Mona.
Her name's Mona.
I swear to you, it's Mona.
She looks like a Mona. She has like a red hair and a heavy eyelid. She looks a lot like
and a floral print.
Yeah, she's not Mona from Who's the Boss. She's very like
she's not Catherine Hellman.
No, but she is a redheaded Mona from, let's say, Seventh Heaven.
Or that's a beautiful...
She would be perfect on some.
She would be any of the office matrons or neighbors or...
Oh, 100%. Any neighbor, any adult that ever interacted with the Camden family, Mona
played that part. She played... She was like... Seventh Avenue was like Law and Order at the New York Broadway scene where Mona played like 8 or 9 different characters on Seventh Avenue. It was always concerned mom number 2. Or office aide with anxiety.
And like now that you've said that, I'm in like a place of like turmoil because she could have really used this going to series. You know?
Yeah.
And like, because if she was on Seventh Heaven, which I imagine she was many times, Stephen Collins got her reruns pulled from her.
Oh, that son of a bitch.
So we find out that her partner's new, this young guy that she has in the car, he wasn't expecting a murder the first week.
It's his first week.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the whole point
of
what I'm saying.
Yes,
it's just
sorry.
Like, oh my God, they take this guy. And they're like, guess what? Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Ohio Amish country would be easy? Not today, honey.
Well, not even. It's just like, I hate that they took like the young black comedic relief guy into this first. It just seems very obvious to me as a show. I'm like, okay, see, as a network, I would have bumped on that right away and said, like, could we like not do the most obvious
choice.
Like, thing they do in all movies?
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, he's comedic relief.
Yeah.
So Niamh knows right away that the girl that she found is Amish. She says there's no hair dye, no tattoos. And she goes, by the way, the dress is Amish. So like the last thing she gets to is, to me, the most obvious thing is that this girl's wearing a burlap sack that's like somewhere like loose below her ankles.
Yeah.
And it's like, that would have been the first tell to me.
Oh, yeah. But I liked how she led with, you know, all the impurities that the real, not the real world,
right.
But that
they're
the
like,
world
no
at large.
There's no piercings, there's no tattoos,
there's no hair color,
no
nail
dye.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So Neve tells the Amish person that they can talk there or they can talk at the station, but either way they have to talk. So she's like run into this older Amish man.
Yes, who freezes her.
Yeah.
And he'll only talk. First, we think it's just sexism. We think because he'll only talk to the male cop. Right. And then we realize, no. Neve speaks Amish. And Neve goes, this is an official investigation. You will speak to me. And the elderly Amish gentleman was not here for that. But he did eventually. But at first, you really do think you're like, oh, it's just, it's almost as if you're trying to look at the,
right.
Like you like see the
we'll
community.
Speak to the man.
Yeah. Which, right. But no, it's really that Neve has a connection to the Amish and some, or this man, and something has happened that he thinks lowly of her.
So is like Amish language, is it Dutch? Like a,
I feel very ignorant. I'm assuming it's an offshoot of, it has to be an offshoot of Dutch.
Because I know Pennsylvania Dutch is what they refer to as the Amish community. And it does
and they're in Ohio, but it does sound very Dutch. Not as severe as German, but like light Dutch.
And there is a huge Amish community in both Ohio and Pennsylvania. And I want to say I've heard incredible things about your donuts.
And their butter.
If you want to send me donuts overnight from Ohio, reach out. I will absolutely arrange that.
Can I get one thing out of my system just real quick because we're talking about the Amish? Did you ever see the Kirstie Alley, Tim Allen film for Richer or Poorer?
Yes, I did.
I just want to say I've always felt that Kirstie Alley has been undervalued as a film actress.
Yeah, she's like my favorite actress.
Isn't she though? She really is. She's clever.
I thought she was so chic when I was growing up. My mom also like kind of looked like her at certain
points.
Wait,
so were you always a Rebecca? Then so you're like total Rebecca.
Well, I grew up watching Cheers because I'm from Boston.
Yeah.
So like that was, yeah. So like she was always very like cool and like a hot actress to me. Like oh, that's like Jennifer Aniston, but from my childhood.
And you remember her as the mom and or the case officer in It Takes Two?
Yes.
That's another great movie.
Yes. It Takes Two is a great movie.
Anyway,
I mean,
sorry,
I love my Olsen twins.
Well, and especially when they do feature films. But I had to get that out, that shout out to For Richer or Poorer, which is always on HBO Go. Please watch it if you haven't, but it's a great Tim Allen, Kirstie Alley movie where they both seem rather high throughout.
That's probably actually very true. High
and Marla Maples. And Marla Maples is in it.
High on what?
And I mean, I don't know what they're smoking in the Dutchland. At first, it seems
you
cocaine.
Think it seems like, okay, coke.
Or some glue, something. There's something they're on. And then the last thing with that movie is For Richer or Poorer is one of the only films. As well as Executive Decision the year before that, Marla Maples, the second wife of 45's, who is an ill-fated actress, who what I love is that Ivana Trump still calls her that showgirl.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
That's it. That's my rant. I know we can go back to Neve, but just.
And by the way, this whole podcast is like, stop apologizing because we're also probably not going to do this chronologically. So, like, just, we'll just, I'll just.
We
skip
got Kirstie Alley
an hour
yeah.
If we do.
If
a
we
tangent.
Ramble. Yep.
So we find out that this girl was hung upside down and bled to death that way. So they drain the blood from her neck.
Did you write down, I'm sorry, the word? Because I was fascinated by the word. It was, we'll have to look it up. Or the word.
It was like, it's something, it's like an ematum something.
Yeah, it's something, but it's very unique how they say it.
Yeah, so they, basically, she says, look for any person, like any Amish girl, 18 to 24, who went missing. So the whole town knows about the slaughterhouse killer, which was the slaughterhouse killer is apparently the only guy in the history of this town who has ever bled girls to death in this way. And he leaves Roman numerals on
their
stomach.
And he killed five. I think he killed five, but this was back in the, like, 94.
1995.
95.
Yeah.
What a great year. This was back in 95, and he killed five girls and then disappears.
Yes. So then we find out that Neve characters, her character Kate, she was Amish, but she left when she was 18. And they're not allowed to talk to her, but they can answer her questions when they have, like, police official business, right? So then the mayor rolls up to the police station.
And he's already a dick.
The mayor's, like, completely has his panties in a ball. He's very obviously worried about any sort of re-election sort of thing or any sort of, like, smearing of any names on the town. And so his whole thing is, like, let's call in extra reinforcements.
Let's call in the FBI because we're a tourism town. We don't want to get known as.
And more so, like, we didn't expect when we elected, like, a young female chief of police that this would actually happen.
Yeah.
We didn't expect a murder.
We expected quiet time.
So she's obviously very offended by this, but then right away a younger cop that's back, he had just done a tour in Alaska for a long time where he apparently murdered a bear and that was very famous. He comes in and is like, Mayor, Mayor, I got you, man. Like, I got your back.
I got
Don't
you.
Don't even worry about it. What's this guy's name?
I want to say Officer Thompson, but I could be wrong.
No, Tom.
Did he have a mustache?
John Thompsonlin is the name of the guy that's like her.
The FBI guy.
Yeah. His name begins with an S. It's like a Scotty or something.
But does he have a mustache?
No, he doesn't have a mustache. Okay. He doesn't have a mustache. He has like a little bit of scruffies.
Yeah, he's kind of cute.
He's cute. He definitely is cute, but also in a way that it's like, I should have expected more. So basically, the mayor's like, we've already called a profiler in. I don't care if you like it or not. We got to call in a profiler. We got to protect this town. So that said, from everything I know from police shows, that's a very big deal. It's a huge violation when they call in another sort of precinct or whatever.
Especially before an operation.
Criminal investigation.
A criminal investigation has even really started.
Right.
It's a slap in the face.
They're like, you can't do it.
No, because we don't trust you.
So we find out the profiler is this guy. His name's John, and he's drinking on the street of, I guess it's Cleveland, now we learn. And he's just drinking on the street of Cleveland. He comes out of a liquor store, pours some liquor into his coffee. And we learn that he's on a four-month bender, and being asked to go in is a little bit too much for him.
Yeah.
He says this right off the bat.
He's cute, though.
Yeah, he's super hot. And he's drinking during the day on the street. And the boss is like, hey, you got any questions? He goes, yeah, I just got one. Why are you always such a jerk? And like, I thought that was kind of cute.
That was darling.
I was like, I love
with
you.
With a little twinkle in his eye.
Basically, Kate, Neve Campbell, she's really like invested in this case. And she asks her partner, aka the new guy, to look up any cases where blood is draining, like as a theme.
Nationwide, doesn't she?
Yes. And she wants a list of abandoned properties. So she knocks on an Amish door. She goes to some Amish people's door. She sees Sarah. This is now we know her sister-in-law. And she has to speak to Jacob.
Jacob, her brother, who is
Jacob.
But who's played by her actual brother, Christian Campbell.
Really?
That's her brother.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Good for her.
I only know him at... Did you watch Big Love? You watched Big Love, didn't you?
Yeah.
Did you watch the final season?
No.
Well, he played... You remember Carolyn, Chloe Sevigny's daughter that she rescues from the compound?
Yeah. Who was that actress that played her?
I want to say Annalise something.
Like,
she's cute.
She's a little like bad girl. No, she's like she's a real adult actress.
But yeah, she's great, but she's wicked in the show.
Yeah, no. I'm saying, but like also she's like some. She's like not Amanda Seyfried, but she's someone on a big level that we know now.
Oh, do we?
Yeah, she's like famous. I can't think of who she is, but she's like.
You can picture her face though. She kind of has a Reese Witherspoon heart-shaped face.
I like, it's not Rachel McAdams, but like it's a big fucking, she turned into a big star. We'll think about it later. But yeah.
The only thing I've ever seen Christian Campbell in is he plays a high school professor who begins an illicit love affair with Carolyn.
Makes sense.
On Big Love.
Yeah, makes sense.
But that's the only other film role or television film I've seen Christian Campbell
in. Is Neve Campbell Canadian?
Yeah, she is. I want to say from Vancouver, but she might be from the other part of the country on the other side.
I was going to say, she has a very Canadian look, and that makes her brother make even more sense contextually.
But doesn't she look... I think Neve Campbell... I mean, I know looks are only skin deep, but she is so stunning and
she's
has
beautiful.
Continued to just look so fresh and elegant yet accessible. I mean, she's just – I can't get over how beautiful she is.
She's really beautiful. There is one moment during this movie later on where I couldn't tell if it was my computer or if it was her that it did look a little bit like the Scream mask, though. It was it was like a jaw thing, and I was like, that must be my computer because she's looked stunning.
And her hair looked so – she – I know we were talking about the hair and Scream, and Sydney always had such feisty hair. Well, I love her hair in this film because it's a smidge layered, and it's like to the neck, striking brunette, and then just those piercing blue eyes and all that purple. And it just makes her a very beautiful scene.
She's very beautiful, especially in all the snow. So basically he says, why have you come here? Which is...
Oh, you again.
Why you've come here. Why you have again. You come here?
You again.
So... She says she's here as police business and like...
And he has to talk to her.
Exactly. So she says it was an Amish girl that was killed. Then you talk about Daniel Lapp. We find out something very terrible happened with this guy named Daniel Lapp many years ago. At this point, we are not sure what it is, but I'm sure since we all have good educated brains on our shoulders, we know what it was. We find out that the dad apparently killed a guy, that something happened. We don't really know it for sure what it was, but there was a lot of tension around the whole thing.
And the brother helped cover it up.
Something happened with Neve. This guy, he went dead. Whatever, all we know is that it caused a big rift in the family.
And he went dead at the mill.
Yes. And so we know that basically what we know is that they can go to hell for this, but they did what they had to do. So she and her brother go to the abandoned barn that's on the property and they start kicking around looking for stuff. Maybe there's any trace of this Daniel Lapp character. And her brother tells her that their job on the planet is to forgive, even if it's murder. She decides that she needs to start digging. She finds something when she's digging, and her brother basically holds up this lantern, and she's like, I found it, I found it. And it's like a skeleton, and he flashes the lantern on it, and it's like a dog's head skeleton. And she's holding it so close to her face that I had like a little bit of a panic attack.
I don't remember that part.
I just was like, that's so bad for your skin.
A dead animal head carcass?
Yeah, like I won't let like a fucking ray of sun hit my skin, let alone like be like three. If I turned and I was like within a Biore strip distance of a dog skull, I would fucking freak out. I would freak out. She throws the skull down. She's like, ugh, it's not what I was looking for. So we see a hot Amish guy that's like noticing
he's so
her,
hot.
Right?
He's like Garrett Hedlund.
Right? And basically, she says that she needs to ask about Daniel Lapp to him. And she says, has anyone heard from him? And he's like, why don't you leave? She's like, I've lived with this every day, okay? I don't know what to do. And he's like, I have a family. I have a future.
So I know. And we remember when she goes, I know. I saw your children. They're beautiful.
So basically, what we find out is that she does say to him, I'm investigating a murder. But what we also find out is that this is like her ex-boyfriend from when she was in Mormon.
No, fiance.
Sorry. Fiance.
When she was a Quaker.
From when she was in Amish times.
Oh, not a Quaker. I'm sorry.
By the way, I said Mormon. It's fine. Don't worry. We're going to fuck this up a lot. So if you have any religious sensitivities, it's time to tune off to the podcast. Feel free to delete the Patreon. So we get back, basically, long story short, these two dated. It's weird. He doesn't know anything, but he wants to know more, but he doesn't know anything. So we get back to the police station, and this guy comes in, and he introduces himself as John Tomasetti. They met last summer.
Oh, remember, and he's sitting at her desk with, like, feet on the table.
Hey, Kate, and he's, like, literally smoking a cig.
But first Mona goes, there's someone here to see you. Mm-hmm. And already you're like, what is Mona's personal life? Is she married? Is she divorced? Like, you want to know everything about Mona in these few line readings.
Yeah, I, like, can't decide if I think Mona's divorced and, like, she's,
widowed.
Like, getting her life.
Widowed.
Or, like, whatever. Oh, you think she's widowed.
I get a widow feel.
Okay. So, she's like, okay, fucking John Tomasetti, like, can't even with this.
Get
put your
feet
cigarette
off my
out.
Table.
Take your, yeah. So, then the sheriff comes in and he introduces himself to John Tomasetti. This is a guy we're going to want to keep our eyes on. Whatever his name is, he's the sheriff. So, they met last summer at his swearing in. He asks him if it's true, if you really killed the bear. And then the mayor calls.
I'm sorry. Can I ask you a question? What's the difference between the police chief and the sheriff?
I don't fucking know.
Okay.
Like, I think a sheriff.
Is a sheriff higher than a police chief?
I think it, no. I think the sheriff is like the, it's sheriff chief.
Okay.
I think that's how it works, right? Okay. So basically what we learn is that the mayor has already called three times this morning. He's offered to help them out on behalf of the county, basically. They're like, let's make sure John Tomasetti's here, right? We got to get John Tomasetti in the mix. He's a profiler for, I guess, Cleveland, right? He's
yep.
the local, like,
of FBI. He's the local Cleveland FBI agent.
So the station feels like it's taken a lot for them to handle all the PR because they're working on the tourism there. So they didn't think they'd have this much for her to do. Basically, this is the part where the sheriff is like, listen, honey, okay?
And we hired you for good press. You're a woman, but we didn't expect you to have to actually work.
Mm-hmm. So then we go on here, and John Tomasetti's looking over the papers, and he's like, these killings look very cruel. Mm. He, like, puts out a cig in his coffee, like, as he's looking at this. So it's, like, very power move. Like, okay, I'm going to, like, put my cigarette out that you asked me three times to put out, but I'm going to do it in the cup of coffee that Mona has to wash up. Like, that's all I was
that
thinking.
That was very, like, oh, Mona
has to
get
have to wash this out, right? Who else is going to do that if not him? So we learn that there's no DNA at the scene mm-hmm. with the dead body. They either have the best killer ever or he cleans his bodies vigorously at the scene. Why would he start back up if this is the original guy? And so Kate says, no, it's got to be a copycat. Then we find out Ezra and Bonnie, two Amish people, they're at the medical examiner's when this happens.
They're the, yeah.
Ezra and Bonnie, two Amish people, are here to see if their daughter is there because she's been gone for 2 weeks.
That they haven't reported.
Yes, they haven't identified this or reported this. So they go in to identify the body, which for me, like as a regular as person, seems like the worst thing I'd ever have to do.
I can't think of anything worse than that someone thinks it's either someone's been missing or you're called to identify. And again, with this, remember, both Bonnie, now we're coming into even more Amish, Bonnie and Edgar, was it?
Ezra
would not talk directly to Neve.
They wouldn't.
They wouldn't look at Neve Campbell. They wouldn't look at that beautiful purple. And so all of us, we're like, wow, Neve, whatever you did was bad to them.
Yeah, right. So Ezra and Bonnie, honestly, I think about it every time I see it on SVU or anything else. Do they really, like, how often do they actually do that? Do they make someone come in and identify the body?
I think someone else, to officially say someone's dead, I think someone, if you die in your house, they have to find someone to say this is
that
so
person.
And so, and they're dead.
It's just so painful. Every time I watch it, I'm like, oh my God, I cannot imagine someone like pulling back a sheet and like my parent or my child or my friend is under that sheet. So can you imagine if they're Amish?
Oh.
And they've been never even seen TV.
No.
And like all of a sudden they're seeing a sheet.
And they immediately
back.
Break into, they're very stoic, both Bonnie and Ezra.
Yeah.
And they break into the Lord's Prayer.
Prayer. So the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not wait. He maketh me lie down in the green pastures. They won't answer Kate. They have the male cop answer all the questions. They learn that she disappeared on the Sabbath and never came back. The daughter became unruly, and they thought that she just ran away. John wants to know why they wouldn't speak to Kate back there in the room. And it turns out that Kate grew up. She waitressed in Cleveland. She took the test to be a cop. She passed. She applied here when the chief left last year. So this is her first year in the town. But she used to be a part of this whole ass community.
She left on the day she turned 18 and never came back.
Yes. So he's like, oh, I thought you were a horrible, boring stiff for a different reason, but it turns out you're Amish. Very cute. So someone comes up with a note. One of the deputy Dewey, comes up with a note. And the note was slipped under the door of the bishop that morning. And it says,
yeah.
Kate Burkholder knows who the killer is. But it says it in, like, Dutch or whatever, right?
Yes.
So she's like, oh, God, they must be kidding. And John's standing right there. And he's like, I wasn't aware the Amish were into that kind of humor. True life. And he's like, it's okay. You're hiding something. It won't be a secret for long, honey. I'm an FBI profiler. Kate goes by the barn where they're like doing some cast iron shit. And she sees Lucas. He's like, I need to know what happened first before, like, tell me why you left. And she's like, right as she starts to like tell him, she gets a call from the police. And they're like, we need you to come ASAP. She says she didn't want to leave. She tells him right now. She's like, I didn't want to leave. It wasn't my choice. I can't tell you whose choice it was, though. And she bounces. Then they get to the next crime scene. And they find out the guy they're looking for is this guy named Dwayne, who has knives. Dwayne is basically like a local crackhead that has like too many magazines and like...
Inappropriate magazines.
Yeah, there's inappropriate magazines. He apparently has a marijuana joint that's like smoking on the table. And he's like, it's a cigarette, which
wife
I believe
beater.
Him, right?
He's wearing a wife beater.
Oh, I was going to say, but he's also done none of these things. Like, they basically pegged like this whole crime on him for doing nothing. And John gets up. He looks like he's going to puke right away. Kate sees John outside. And she's like, yo, why'd you like fucking arrest this man? Like, there's no reason for this. He didn't do any of it. He's like, I need a drink. Every time the adrenaline hits, I need a drink. And she's like, oh, my God, you have PTSD, which like in which case, like, I do have PTSD. No one ever told me that that's why I need a drink when I'm stressed out.
Why did he have PTSD? Will you explain?
Well, we'll find out.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Because that part I was a little hazy
about. I've got all your answers, honey.
Thank you, baby. Because I was confused.
It's coming up. So he tells her he knows that he shouldn't be there in this Amish town, but he can't retire because he doesn't do well at home. Basically, they kind of let him chill until like basically the end of his term comes up. But the new guy that they sent in, he hasn't showed up yet, so they sent him to deal with the slaughterhouse killer, okay? He tells her that he's famous, and that when he got his shield, it was and when he did, it was because he got one of the biggest crime bosses in all of Ohio. But he didn't go after him for revenge. He killed his wife instead. They never made the arrest in her murder. So basically, this guy is, like, widowed, right?
Yeah.
He got, like, fucking...
Did they kill the kid, too?
No, there was no kid.
It was just the wife?
It was just the wife.
Okay.
And they never made the arrest in her murder. So he's like really been dealing with this with drinking, which like obviously right away as an audience member, I'm like, these two are about to fuck, which in my mind is wrong.
There's tension building.
Because I have to ask, like,
they both have hard trauma.
They do this thing in Lifetime movies where literally like someone's like, I'm raped. I was raped. And then like the guy's like leans in for a kiss. Like it's always like these moments. And I understand in life, you do sort of like connect over big moments.
Yeah.
But in these movies, it's always like yeah, my wife got fucking murdered by a crime boss. And I'm like, ooh, why do I feel like my pussy tightening? Like, it's literally, it's like a whole fucking thing and I don't understand. So basically, John's like, listen, let me tell you one thing. It's not a copycat killer, okay? A copycat would need a set of instructions. This guy is the real deal, and this guy has been all over the country because of the gap in years. There's nothing like that anywhere in the U.S. over all these years. So they get to the new scene, and there is a young girl dead under some sort of, like, bleachers or something.
Yeah, oh, yeah, there's another call called in.
Mm-hmm. So John basically and tells her right away. Yeah, he's like, the killer is here. The killer's in the building. Right when it happens. It's like under a gymnastics banner. It's like, we love gymnastics. And there's like a fucking dead body right underneath it. It's a young teen girl. And John's like, the killer is here. He's like, it's not his MO, but this guy is here. I can promise you that.
Yeah.
So I wrote, it has to be the sheriff. That's my guess.
Yeah.
So the sheriff hears him say this. And all of a sudden, he's like, all right, we need to steal the building. The killer's in here. We need to steal the building. So the mayor now comes in, and the mayor is, like, here to, like, be part of the business. But all of a sudden, he realizes, oh, my God, that's my daughter underneath the steps. Right? So he runs to it. It's, like, it's terrible. And right away, he starts fucking with the evidence, which at first, I'm like, oh, my God, is he in on this? Was he the murderer?
Was he the killer? Yeah.
Right.
She's, like, cradling her dead body. And
it's very JonBenet. It's very JonBenet.
Yeah.
So Katie talks to the FBI. They never did their search for someone who has this MO. He asked her why someone would think that she knows who the killer is. She says it's gossip, Amish people. Yeah, it's their Amish curse. They have no TV, so they gossip and send letters to the bishop, which I was like, oh, God, that is another reason why I do not want to be Amish.
You imagine just sending a 10-page letter to the bishop?
Yes. In the 90s when we had to manually write to the Inquirer about who we thought killed JonBenet. Yes. Yeah. But like that said, like I cannot imagine this being like, you know what? Guess who didn't turn in their milk pail today?
Yep.
Yeah.
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 Susan next door.
So she goes to see some people in Amish land.
Guess who didn't turn in their milk pail today? You know I just got it. Yeah. I love it.
So she goes to meet someone in Amish land, and she runs into her ex-fiance, Lucas, and he says that her brother told her about Lapp. He wants her to – Daniel Lapp. He wants her to know why she didn't come to him with this. He tells her that she needs to see her brother. Whoever sent the bishop has to have walked. So basically the guy – he followed the tracks to his brother's farm. So there's no way that whoever it wasn't her brother. Her brother dropped off this note. So right away, I'm like, obviously it's Sarah, his fucking wife, right? But no, we have to go through this. So his wife seems really jealous of Kate when she gets to the place. Kate knocks on the door. She's like, can I talk to my brother? Lucas is there with him. They're all doing this whole thing. They're fighting in like Dutch or whatever it is. There's a lot of like subtitles. And then all of a sudden, Sarah comes in. She's like, hey, stop fighting. This was all my doing. I know what's going on. I don't want to live like this. The only way to end this situation is to go to the bishop. And then basically Sarah turns to her husband, Neve Campbell's brother, and he's like, it's true. I uncovered a memory. So he basically what he says is he remembers this moment where his dad came home that night and he said that he put Daniel into the deepest place he could where no one would ever find him. I wrote, please tell me that he was put into a well and they've been drinking him all these years.
Oh, my God.
Right?
That is so dark.
Sinister.
Very sinister.
But no, Kate tells Lucas that she remembers why she chose him. He tells her to shush. She's English now. It doesn't matter that she chose him. Like, it's this moment where I'm like, Kate, come on.
Kate, you know he has beautiful children.
And also, Kate, like, you cannot think that this is going to, like, play out.
In your favor.
Right. Like, yes, Lucas is hot. Lucas is Amish. You
Lucas
guys
is married
together.
With a bunch of children.
But beyond that, even if he wasn't,
but
you think you could take this man out and do Netflix and chill with Lucas?
Can you imagine, though, being a mother to a bunch of step-Amish children? That cannot be easy.
I mean, it's
English?
It's fully impossible. He would never be able to see his children again. It
no,
would mean
he'd have to leave the community.
But, like, that's the point is, like, it's not only that, but, like, what would she – let's say he did leave the Amish community. How would they hang out together? Like, she's been getting penetrated and playing probably, like, lotto and getting
getting
drinks.
Drunk, getting
yeah.
buck.
And this man has never left. He never did his Rumspringa.
No.
That's also missing
from
this
movie. Is that a
whole year? Yeah. It's, like, basically, like, your gap year. So, he says, you left the Amish community when you were 18 because something happened. Something your family couldn't deal with. Something you couldn't deal with. So, you bolted. Am I right so far? Right. So, what's in that hole there? Or should I say who? Oh, wait. I should say that this starts by Neve Campbell digging up a hole alone in a barn, and then John comes in. He's the one who says
and she's,
all that.
And she's at the deepest. I want to even say it's a mill, and there's a windmill, and she's deep in it, and she's digging.
Yeah.
And she finds.
So she's digging, and he's like, "I'm going to profile you." And he's like, "So what's in the hole there? Should I say who?" And she's like, "Daniel Lapp." And he's like, "Who's that?" And she's like, "A man who hurt me." And he's like, "Well, who put him there?" And she's like, "My father." And he's like, "Okay, so your father killed him?"
Yeah, she gave up this really easy.
And he's like, "No, he didn't kill him. Who did?" "I did." "Oh, Kate, he raped me. Why'd you come here tonight? To make sure that he was dead?" "You didn't know?" She shakes her head. "I thought he was our killer." "Why?" She shows him a scar on her neck, and it's the same scar that's on the first dead body they find. It's the same mark.
Yeah, it's the same mark.
This guy, like, fully – this is, like, a weird part where the story takes on a new form, because it's like, why does she have this mark based on the killer we wind up with? Mm-hmm. That we don't know. Maybe he was just wielding a knife all crazy. So they wind up going to her place to drink, and she says that she's worked on their farm for years. She was she said that Daniel Lapp had worked on her family farm for years. And then we see a flashback of the two of them fighting, and then her running home, screaming into her house on the Amish, like, farmland. He chases her into the house, and then she's pulled up a shotgun at that point and shoots him in the stomach. The family discovers the scene. Her brother and dad put the body into the carriage. And she says to John, "I killed a man." And he says, "In self-defense." And she said, "And now it's all going to come out. Do you know what they will do to my family?" So this is very much like JonBenet to me, where it's she killed. I mean, this is not anywhere near to what the theories are about JonBenet, but let's just say someone you love very much killed someone in maybe self-defense or in a moment of completely irrational behavior.
Yep.
And then you, as a beloved family member, someone who cares about this person, you feel like you have to figure this out for them.
Yeah.
And that actually seemed like a really relatable – for all this movie was, I found this to be a kind of relatable moment where I was like, absolutely. I would absolutely try and figure this out if this was my sister or if this was my family member. I would try and bury a body.
Yeah.
And like how that could, you know, lead to repercussions for many, many years ahead. So – he's like, "Hey, you know, I like your quilt there on the wall." So we find out that she made this beautiful quilt. It's on her wall when she was in the Amish sisterhood.
Is it blue?
It's blue and purple. And she says, "Yeah, it's not the only one." She's got one. He's like, "Oh, you liked it enough to hang it on your wall?" She's like, "Yeah, but I've got one in the linen closet down here and two upstairs." So she's a big quilt head.
Because she goes, "I quilt when I miss my family."
Yeah. She loves to quilt.
Yeah. And she misses her family.
So she says she doesn't have anything left from her childhood. After she left, that was it. She says when her mom died, she didn't even get to see her. She got a call at work. She cried for half the night, and then she went back to work. And the two of them, they start to horn up.
Oh, they're very horny.
And, like, again, in Lifetime movies, like, I can't imagine why, like, someone's mom tragically dying and not finding out about it, or, like, quilting because of depression. I don't know why this is such a horn trigger for them, but they love it on Lifetime. So they segue into a flirty moment. He's like, "I should go." And then she's like, And he's like, "Are you sure?" And she's like,
"Positive."
And she, like, takes a break, and he's like, "So you're not sure? Okay, see you tomorrow." So he walks out and he goes home. And I was like, fuck. He's like, I was like, his game is, like, literally, how long has your wife been dead? Because your game is like, who did you fuck over in Cleveland on these last 1.5
Tinder
drunk
years? Yeah.
So on the news, we learn that there are two bodies from this killer. Now they're looking for the people who left around 1995 and are back now, which is such a wow, what a privilege. Like, literally, what a privilege to be able to be like, who left in 1995 and who's back around now? Like, literally any other city that they tried to track that person down with, there would be, like, such tax evasion or, like, any sort of other thing. Like, the fact, God bless their pure Amish hearts. So a cop comes in and gives her a letter. It turns out, so it's the sheriff that's, like, kind of squeaky. He's like, "Okay, here's a letter. This is from the mayor." He's like, "Broken heart when you had to do it, but I got to escort you out. You've been fired." So Mona is shocked by this.
Mona and the other police officers are, like, baffled.
So the cop comes in and he's like, "Okay, so you can take some things from your desk, but we kind of need to, like, hit the road."
And I also loved when Mona, right before he comes in, there's, like, Mona's like, "What can we do for you?" And she goes, "You've got work to do." It's like, exactly. Stay to the case.
Yep.
That's all Nev cares about.
He goes, you know, we'll talk to the mayor in a week or two, see if we can get you reinstated. Like, he's very on her side, okay? So he's like, and by the way, bring your car back tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. I love that part. No rush, but please bring it back by tomorrow.
So I'm starting to think that this guy might have been the one who wrote the letter or something.
Can I ask you with that, do you feel pretty good? Is there always a telltale sign in Lifetime movies that this is the villain? Is it?
I think honestly, because this is a backdoor pilot, like they made it a lot more obvious.
Yeah,
it felt a lot more like a Lifetime, or it felt a lot more like a Law and Order episode, yeah. Where it was like, okay, like I get this guy killed. Maybe I don't know his motivation.
Yeah, but I'm starting to feel like he's the killer.
And like, if this was to be leading up to, I mean, because she does have Olivia Benson moments at the top and at the end, and there's also this like kind of like hunky guy. Like, I could see if this was to be the first hour and a half long episode of like a great cop show, I would buy that. I do wonder how many episodes they would get out of a show about this town that because is so small.
Yeah, and like how many murders could there possibly be?
Right. And also like at some point it's like, yo, was this like
Cabot Cove/exploitation
of like the Amish community?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, cause at a certain point on episode 13, if we were still fucking with Amishes, like I'd be like, exactly, Cabot Cove. But like you're literally preying on Amish people who do nothing but spin hoops.
And
they have a hoop and a stick.
And churn butter.
And they fucking roll that hoop and stick down the hill. Okay. And that's what they do. That's their fun. So
and gossip.
Yeah.
And gossip.
The two of them, they wind up fucking. Let's just go there. So they wind up fucking.
Well, they wind up because he comes to console her after she's been fired at the house.
And he goes, what are you looking at? And he's like, I'm trying to picture. She goes, what are you looking at? He goes, I'm trying to picture you as an Amish girl. And she says, I'm a little assertive for an Amish girl. And he goes, I was going to say too pushy. You're a hell of a cop. That's about as good as I get with compliments. And probably going to screw this up too. And then they kiss. Which like, I'm going to tell you, no, don't. Because when a guy's like, oh, by the way, I really, really like you. I'm going to date you. I want to screw this up. Like, FYI, he has no intentions of not screwing it up.
He gave you a clear sign.
He gave you the sign. He's like, listen, I'm going to like make this a hot, steamy, little dirty dancing weekend between the two of us, okay? But you're going to go back, bring your fat ass back to Babyville, wherever you came from. And this is just a summer that you had fun with. Like, I hate that when a guy's like, you know, like, don't fucking hold me accountable. Like, I'm just going to like... make my way in your life. Like, don't fucking hold me accountable. Like, that's completely what he's doing. And I love that for them, for this movie.
But not for the life.
Not for the series, even. No, like, I need
for our unproduced series.
For the series. Well, like, their unproduced series. Like, I would have loved
They
for
wouldn't
the
have
Amish.
Jumped in the sack as soon, right? Do you think if this...
No, they would have, but he would have been a more redeemable character, or he would have like had a moment where he's like, ah, I'm dealing with my dead wife. Like, fuck, the Ohio gangsters like fucking left a severed finger at my doorstep. Like, they're going to get my mom. Like, I needed that from them. I needed a severed finger.
The draining of the blood wasn't enough.
Do you agree? Like something in his life, though, to be like from his side of the story,
yeah.
To maybe fill out the character motivations.
A little bit more.
Yeah, he got his like elderly mom's severed finger in his mailbox, but he still wants to be here for Nev Campbell. So he's like bypassing that to go for this. Yeah. You know what I mean?
No, I get that.
Okay. So basically they wake up in the morning and she's like, wait a minute. And they're like underneath her quilt on her bed. She's like, wait a minute. I had an idea. And she like wakes him up. He's like, uh-oh. Because like, God forbid, Kate gets an idea. And she's like, listen, it has to be someone that both the Amish girl and the mayor's daughter wouldn't have been afraid of.
Yeah.
When she, like, this person pulled up to the car, like, pulled up to them in the car, who would it have been? And he goes, it had to have been a cop or a doctor or a fireman. And then all of a sudden there's a bang on our front door and it's the junior cop, the deputy. Oh,
deputy
not the
Dewey.
Deputy Dewey. It's the other guy.
It's
the black guy.
It's the white guy.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it's Deputy Dewey.
So he goes, we made an arrest. It's Samuel Hirschberger. They have clothing from the victim on the floor of the barn and in the home. And she's like, no. Neve Campbell's like, no, he's a simple man.
I've known
man.
Him since.
He's not cruel. I grew up with him.
Didn't he raise a range of free birds? What did she say? She was like, he nursed free birds to health.
Right.
Or something very dramatic.
Basically, like, she's saying, like, this is the Boo Radley of the Amish community. This
Stop
man
it.
Didn't
yes.
do shit.
Not a thing.
Like, he's too, like, basically, they all but say, like, he's too simple-minded to have completed.
And the best part is she goes, I don't want to say he's simple, but right. he's simple.
Right. So then John takes a call. It turns out that he's been ordered back to VCI, which is where he came from. There's a suspect in custody, so they don't need him anymore, right?
Closed.
Yep. So Nichols was the one who did the arresting. So Nichols is the name of the officer that's
Nichols, thank
we've
you.
Had our eye on this whole time. Someone is trying very hard to stop this, but it can't be Nichols, okay? So they get a call from Shelley, and it turns out that she says that Samuel Hirsch – oh, sorry, Mona. Not Shelley. They get a call from Mona, and she says that Samuel Hirschberger just killed himself.
Hanged himself
in his cell. So Kate tells the secretary, Mona, to check that Nichols' military record. She says that the guard says that he passed out for 10 minutes and then he killed himself, which is like...
with his shoestrings.
Right.
And the guard is just so sweet. He's like, I couldn't have been asleep for more than 5 minutes. And when I awoke, he was dead.
Right. So then Kate goes and confronts Nichols. And like right when she gets in to confront Nichols, he's like, yeah, man, just go easy on him. Okay. He's like 2 months left from retirement. Man's like 900 years old. Like, just go easy on him. Okay. So like he's like sweet talking people. He's like coming across this empathetic little creature that's trying to save the elderly man. He probably killed him in front of. Mm. Right. So he goes, all I have to do is leave and the crime is solved, huh? She says that Samuel was too devout for this. He says that she was too close to all of this to even know whether or not Samuel was too devout for this. She can't see the truth for what it is. Nichols tells her that ever since he was a kid, he's always looked at the Amish people and like revered them. And she goes, that's right. You grew up in the area. And he said, yeah. And you spent all that time in Alaska and shot a bear.
Wait, so but that's not Nichols. That's the sheriff she's talking to there.
Nichols is the sheriff.
No.
Nichols
is the black guy. The sheriff's someone else.
I know the sheriff's first name. Listen, all you guys need to know is that the guy who has taken over her fucking job and the one
sheriff.
Who's being like, take it easy, right?
Bring the car back when you can.
Right. So that guy is the one that's like, okay, whatever. So she's putting together that this guy from the very beginning, the sheriff, who was the guy who shot the bear in Alaska that John Tomlinson had heard of, he's the same guy as all of this shit. Oh, my God. This guy grew up here. He left town. He killed a bear. Now he's back here. Now I'm fired. It's all coming together for me. Okay. So she tells Mona to look everything up in Alaska and Georgia that may align in terms of this specific MO, right? The young cop wants to talk to her, but she has things to do on the phone. That's Nichols. Is that the young black guy?
Yeah, that's okay. Nichols. And then she goes, wait 1 minute, because remember what I thought you did. I'm sorry. You did a perfect job of explaining. It's just so because it was so panicked at the station.
No,
you've
truly.
Got Mona.
We've got it all. It's like a whole fucking fruit salad.
At the inn was very popular that day. There were a lot of people coming in and coming out of the inn.
Yes, it was a big day at the bed and breakfast that also happens to be where they try and hold murderers. So basically the guy's like, hey, like lady, like I gotta tell you a new thing. And she's like, I'll be right back. And so she goes outside and she's talking to like a police chief in Alaska. And they're like, she's like, hey, I need like to know anyone who like blood drained any other person. And she's like, oh, we don't call it blood draining. We call it
blood out.
We call it bleeding out.
Bleeding
and so
out.
She's like, fuck, search bleeding out.
Yeah.
So then it turns out, oh my God, guess what? We did have a lot of bleeding out. And it turns out this person did leave Roman numerals on all the dead bodies. And she's like, yeah, that X, it's a Roman numeral. And then like all of a sudden, bam, glove around her mouth. She's being fucking choked out. We know how it is. We've all seen all these shows, right? So next thing we know, commercial break, back up. She wakes up in a van and she's just like staring into the world, right? John takes a call at the station and he finds out that Neve Campbell's character, Kate, had called about a murder in Alaska.
Connects them. Mona is the key. She connects. She goes, she's talking to the guy on the phone, the Alaskan guy. And then John comes in and goes, who is that? They were talking to Kate before she was gone.
Mona went from a zero to a hero in a big way in this movie. And that like typically like, her character didn't need to do any more than this.
But she did
like, what
so
she
much
did in the movie. But she really comes in the last third and just like she earned her season.
She
role.
Would have been a best supporting actress nominee in the drama series for sure.
This is her series regular part that she like fucking nailed down
and has worked hard for after the years of serving background.
Oh my
on Seventh
God,
Heaven.
Years and years of just one line here, one line there. Parishioner number two, fucking auntie number four.
Yeah.
She's played it
bereavement
all, okay?
committee member number
oh,
two.
Oh my God, yes, absolutely, absolutely. So we cut to basically our boy, our fucking murderer, our sheriff. dragging Neve Campbell's tied up body outside in the woods with chains around her feet. And I did notice, oh my God, thank God she's wearing a nice Ugg boot. She has a nice,
at least her feet were warm.
She has a nice little knee high, like almost boot that looks like a fucking knee high Ugg boot. And I'm like, oh my God, if I had chains wrapped around my ankles and I was being pulled by my own weight against my own weight across the floor of a snowy terrain with bricks.
Oh.
I would wish I had an Ugg boot.
And he was so rough with her head. I just remember when they're going up the stairs.
He drags her up four small steps.
And she's awake during this point, but she's pretending she's not. And I'm like, how did you not call out, babe? Mm. Like, your poor sweet noggin.
I would have wrecked my head as high as, like, anything and just be like, fucking just don't get. Like, that's when you really wonder, like, what does it feel like to have a will to live?
Yeah.
You know what
And
I
how
mean?
Much are you going to really take it in? I mean, I don't think you know until you're in it.
Yeah, like I've run down a dark alley from someone that I knew was coming for me and been like, wow. But like, it's really these situations where you have someone like holding you hostage in a Cleveland home for 3 years or 5 years or whatever.
Oh,
fucking J.C. Dugard. Like literally, how do you know you
have... She was like 20 years though. Wasn't
Dude, she was in there for like 15 years. She had a kid. She was like... And
that
then
was
she
her
came
father?
Out. No, it wasn't her father. It was like it was a strange man.
Okay.
He was a strange
wasn't
man.
Wasn't there one... That did put his heat with his one of his daughters and put her in it was like incestuous and threw her and
probably
like five or six in the basement.
I mean, honestly, the unfortunate thing about the movie Room is that like it was so vague enough in terms of our storytelling of things that happen to women in this country that it wasn't like, oh, that's that case.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
Because like there's unfortunately, I hate to say this, like as we listen to this, there are women, oh God. Like, what if there was a woman in a fucking cave right now listening to this?
I know.
Girl, I'm thinking of you, and we're fucking hoping for you. If you're listening to this, if he lets you have podcasts for some reason, fuck. Like, we'll be right there for you, me and Max.
Oh
if you
God.
Have a Patreon subscription,
if you
have a Patreon
that.
Prescription, even, and he allowed, like, anyway. Guys, even if you're listening to this, if you have a Patreon, just put it out in the universe. Me and Max will come and get anyone that's being held in a room, okay? We'll be there.
We'll be there.
Okay. So then let's move on. So he pulls Kate inside and he's like, come on, Kate. We know you're awake.
Yeah, he did say we. And it's like, but there's only you here.
That's the way the killers always did. They're like, come on. We know what's going on.
You little goose.
It's always like we. It's always we as if they're speaking to like an audience of hundreds and thousands, which is why probably I think the average viewer's mind, you have to be like, oh my God, this is one of those motherfuckers that thinks everyone's watching him.
Yeah.
You know, that's all we got. So basically inside the house, he talks to Kate. He's like, look, good job, by the way. I was beginning to wonder if anyone would figure it out. And she goes, where are we? And he goes, he reveals his clawfoot tub under a sheet and he goes, we're at home. So he starts to set up his little station where he likes to drain blood from his victims. And this is very much like, I think SVU like season 19 finales or season 18 finale, season 19 premiere, which is when Olivia was like caught by that guy and like held in this home. It's very much like a game of how much time can we buy by like submitting to a monochrome of abuse while also like getting actual time caught behind us. So, basically, he's like, she's trying to fight out of her ropes while this is going on. And he's like, I know this is your childhood home. Did something happen to you here? And he's like, plenty happened to me here. And I screamed and screamed and nobody ever came. And she goes, do you think that's why you kill people? And he says, I don't know why I kill people. And he goes, I'll keep the heart flowing. I'll tell you that. So he tells he starts to slowly put together the bathtub and then like this funnel system. So he has like a little like plastic funnel that apparently goes under the drain of the bathtub, which all of this makes too much sense to me immediately.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh my God, he drains their blood in this clawfoot tub and drains it into the bottom, like into
and then
the
easy to wash in a pit.
Yeah, because like if you go behind my house right there, like past that door right there, there's like some dirt that goes up to a hill.
Yeah.
That's what happens in these hill homes. So like, fuck, it's just like all going to go in the ground. So then all of a sudden, we find out that they still have 35 abandoned properties to look at right back at the station. They haven't even looked into these 35.
Do you remember when Mona's frantically, when Mona's
scene.
Trying to frantically print, there's this great scene that really was just sums up the movie. And the guy goes, where are the properties? And the camera pans to Mona and Mona just goes, I'm still printing the copies out. Yeah. Just like hurriedly. Hey, it's so dramatic.
Because also like this is a little bit like 1995 Alaska. Like it might as well have taken place there the same way that Northern Lights starring Leanne Rimes and Eddie Cibrian, the movie that they met on. They like literally are like, look, man, okay, we only got one ink cartridge per year. Okay. Like we're doing the best we can. As if they can't just like all gather around a computer and look at a map of these properties. But then while they're printing, don't worry, Mona. Because okay. John starts to piece together that the sheriff has these pictures of his childhood home all around the room. And they're like, and he turns to one of the cops and he's like, what's the deal with all these houses? And they're like, oh, his parents are dead now. That whole property has been dead for years. It's completely abandoned. And so they're like, all right, let's throw some darts at the board and go to this one. Yeah. So they go out there. They send a message to everyone. They get these emergency bells ringing. Now, apparently, what happens in Amish country when something is awry is everyone starts a ringing the bells. And there's like church bells, and it's just like it's bell central.
What's the in the triangle? I loved when the girl came out with the triangle.
Wait. Yes. Eventually we get to a part where, yes, there's a girl. Okay. So we have to the part where the triangle comes in is interesting to me because things are so de-escalated by the time we find out there's literally two girls banging on triangles. I don't know if any of you took like music, and but like banging your triangles, like
it's a step below the castle.
It's the most useless thing that you could do. It's like literally like a wind chime. Yeah. Which also, actually, the noise of a wind chime is actually a flashback moment. So maybe it's deeper than all that. But John said, the sheriff that's killing her, he says to her, he's like, you're full of questions and you're stalling for time. People are trying to make too much sense out of all of this. It already happened. What about just some girl in a green dress or some girl in jeans who happened to catch your eye, which is like terrifying. Because like right away I was going to all the places like where I was in my 20s where some like fucking guy leaned out of a car and asked me a question, but I decided to scooch a looch, like whatever. So she's like, you know, you don't have to do this. They're too close to finding us anyway. And then she kicks over these chemicals that he was going to use probably, I guess, to knock her out, like a chloroform or whatever. And she kicks them into a small lantern that he had lit. So right as this all happens, there's an explosion. John comes in and he shoots at the sheriff who has him. And then the sheriff shoots back. It's unclear who got shot here, but at least one person has been shot.
The sheriff gets shot.
The sheriff gets shot, but also John gets shot. And we don't really know that at first. Yeah. He's like, I'm okay. And like, this is where I'm also like, dude, like how drunk is this guy?
Yeah.
Because like all of this, like the driving around town, the getting shot in the arm, that I just need a drink thing. Like, is this man drunk?
Yeah.
Okay, is he? Because, like, that's what I want to know. They never really, like, act like he's capable of catching up to the alcohol he's drinking, which is of interest to me. So he starts to carry her out, and there's, like, right away, the place is almost nearly blown up. So the girls, we see the girls in the yard, like, playing their fucking rectangles out in Amish country to try and, like, stop this murder. Then all of a sudden, there's, like, this creepy crawly moment where the two of them are, like, trying to trap the sheriff, who is alive but shot. He got shot in the leg or something. And, like, all of a sudden, all the other cops show up, and they're all creepy crawling around this barn like they're in an octagon around it. And she turns around, Neve Campbell turns around off the side of the barn. She goes, we've got you surrounded, Nate. You might as well come out. And he's like, you know, he's still going to try and go for it. And then all of a sudden, fucking Lucas walks in. Her ex-fiance,
strong, silent Lucas.
And I wrote, like, fucking, he unknowingly walks into this barn. Yeah. I thought this was an accident.
He just wanted to get some manure.
No, but he turns to him and he goes, hey, it's finished now. And then he waits.
He holds his hand out.
And he takes the fucking gun from his hand using Amish powers.
Gently.
Amish powers. Like,
and the guy
literally
just looks defeated like, you know, Lucas, you're right.
You fucking gave me your Amish. It's like Austin Powers, but Amish powers.
Amish powers.
That's actually who I'm going to be for Halloween.
Amish powers.
Yeah. So Katie's back in the office now. Honey, it's all over. She's relaxed, okay? She's got an oatmeal raisin druid circle fucking in her mouth.
Mona's comes
in.
Tea.
So Mona comes in, exactly. By the way, she's like, oh, there's a loose cow, which is how this whole movie started. And she goes, oh, I'll go deal with it myself.
And Neve Campbell just smiles to herself and goes, I'll take care of it.
I think I'm going to cite them this time. Yeah,
exactly.
Because she's like, LOL, last time we didn't put these cows on blast.
We found a dead body. We got led to
a fucking viable murder that actually changed the state of this county. So I'm just going to go drop off a ticket on that. And thank you so much, Mona. You have a good night.
Mona, enjoy.
Help yourself to the leftover pastry. Bring them back to your husband, enjoy. Okay?
She's a widow.
Exactly. So we go outside and John is out there.
Look, he looks cute. He looks cute.
And he looks cute, and he's got a little sling on his
arm. He's a sweet little sling.
And he goes, I'm going back to Cleveland tonight, but I want a sinner. Oh, he goes, I want a sinner. I want a dinner with the chief. And recorrected dinner to sinner. I want a sinner with the chief.
I want a dinner to sin with the chief.
So he's going wearing his sling. She drives off. So she's driving them to their dinner, probably because he's drunk or because he doesn't have an arm.
Yeah.
Either way, like, I think both of them should be in an Uber.
Oh, God, yes.
Just going to throw that out.
Oh, hell yeah.
Between the emotional distress of the last 48 hours, because I love that, like, she goes right from, I mean, this man still has a sling on his arm. She goes right from being a victim with chains around her ankles to
getting some.
Running the police station.
Running the police station, having witty banter with Mona, solving the cow problems, and then getting some good old D that night.
So then Lucas sees her on his buggy in town, and he nods to her, and he looks back. Like, he's checking out that car's sweet, sweet ass. Like, the way that he turns.
It was so sweet.
He's like, I'm looking at you. I'm still seeing
you. I'm looking at you looking at me. And then remember when she sees her brother in the barn? And
so then the last shot is her jogging the way that she was in the first scene. But she's running by a new barn. It looks like a fresh barn-raising barn.
Yeah, we've done away with the old barn. We built a new one.
And her brother looks out and he waves to her and she waves
and nods
back.
And that sweet little nod. Mm-hmm. So maybe an Amish murder, the series would have turned in more to like My Amish Tea. And it was about her bridging her. Because where do you think the series
Tea, like T-E-A? Or
yeah, like just like let's have some tea. No, let's just have some tea. And her rebuilding her relationship with the Amish.
I mean, I think it would definitely be about the Amish community for sure.
But not murders, would it?
Not necessarily murder, but it feels a little bit like their version of SVU. Which I will say, this is why I feel like the show didn't go to series. Is like, one, no one wants to see, of all people, I feel like an Amish man being driven out of his home is kind of like a ruthless ask for your audience to be okay with.
It just would have been a difficult way to fill 10 episodes, I think.
You could fill it, but it would be very unlikable, or you need some like sort of more backstory because like we need to maybe hear from the mom. Like maybe the mom never died. Maybe the mom ran away as
and
well.
And where does Mona live?
Well, who knows about that? We'll figure that out. Maybe Mona will be like, they could do like a fun dance montage, like sort of like a Mona goes on a date sort of thing. But like I'm saying, like my natural inclination would be to say that maybe her mom never died. And the call that she got about her mom dying was like a cover for the fact that her mom also left because she was so disturbed by the rape that was covered up by the community.
That maybe she herself. Yeah, maybe expanded it.
Or perhaps like, you know. I mean, I think it's a big ask to ask for the community, Amish or Lifetime viewer community, to get on board with Lucas, an Amish man leaving his wife. Because it's like, yeah, like fucking tough job getting an Amish man to leave his wife.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like,
but if anyone could do it, Nev could.
No, I'm saying literally like any person that has like a fucking spark in their eye could probably get an Amish person to leave their wife. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's not hard. So it's like, that's not an interesting storyline because we'd all be like, well, yeah, you fucking bitch. Like, you have electricity. Of course he's going to leave. Like, you have actual Netflix. Like, you have Hulu. Like, you guys would hang out and be like doing great.
Making love.
And he'd be like so pleased to not be
watching the Fire documentary and just loving life.
And then Joe, I think, was a great romantic interest. But I also felt like he was like any of the guys that – do you watch SVU?
I've seen episodes here and there, but not religiously.
Do you know the blonde girl, Amanda, that's been on the last couple seasons?
No.
She's like kind of like, she has a story where she's a little bit of a gambler. She wasn't really a drunk, but she's a little bit of a gambler. Maybe she is in the program, actually. She's a little bit of a gambler. She has a gambling addiction. She came from Georgia after like a series of paralyzing events, and she's always into the wrong guy, okay? And so, like, I feel like Joe could, in a good way, become the wrong guy.
Yeah.
Where, like, maybe he knocks her up.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have to go back to Cleveland and deal with my shit.
My alcoholism.
And there could definitely be an arc where they go to Cleveland where she's like, I want to learn about your shit. And then maybe there she finds a Rumspringa guy
yeah.
when she's in Cleveland.
I mean, and that was 16 to 21. apologies when I
looked it up. So 16 to 21.
Is when they're usually, and it said something like 80% come back.
So it's one, yeah, so it's 1 year, right?
Yeah.
And
well, technically it can be, technically the idea is between any age when you, I apologize, I don't think I'm doing it justice, but any age after you finish your official kind of schooling of the religion and the culture,
right,
which is usually 15 to 16, until you decide to be baptized in it.
Okay, yeah.
So that can be, so I mean, I think they encourage that you're, but I don't think you're a part truly of the Amish community until then you're baptized.
And the, like, the sad thing is that, like, this is where, it also is a strange age, because like 16 to 18 is like an age in America where you can get into a lot of shit, but you can't do anything legally.
Yeah.
And so the unfortunate thing is, like, I'm sure you've seen, we both know and love Sister Wives.
Yeah.
Like, these are, it's not dissimilar to this community in a sense where it's like, you can go off and you can go live your life, but
you're always going to be tied to it.
And,
way.
And more than that, like, a lot of these people, this is their first time out. So they get really, they get heavily involved in drugs. That is a huge, huge, huge thing. Is like, you, I've seen, I think, a few like documentaries and or movies that are based around just like sort of the partying that goes on during Rumspringa and how many people like find it very hard to go back. There was a really good HBO documentary about it a few years back where you just got to see these kids that were like, yeah, we went on Rumspringa and now I'm on fucking meth.
Yeah.
And like, they never came home. They never came back. And because it's a lot to ask someone with no real education in terms of like what we all formally have unleashed into the English world, as they call it, which is also.
Do you and you watch Orange is the New Black, don't you?
Yes.
Remember Leanne, the
yes.
one of them, she was Amish and that she got hooked on the meth and then
she
came
is
home.
Exactly like yeah. that is the reason why that actually that character is great is because I feel like they didn't start out with that for her.
No, we never knew.
No.
We didn't know until like season three that that's when she, which I love because she's so, you hate her so much and then you see her. That show
and
is
her
brilliant.
Brunette meth friend, meth head friend is from Boston, I think.
Yeah, but we never get her full, we never got to see her backstory, which I wish we had before they like, because she was so fat.
But both the reason why it's so great is because meth is an epidemic throughout this country, and like there are very few like holes in the world where meth really rocks their universe, and in a way that it doesn't most other people. And I feel like in the Amish community in particular, I feel like meth is such a confusing drug to so many of us who live in the real world and know people that do drugs or have done
and
other drugs.
Meth is all chemical. Right.
Meth is, yeah, chemical. Like, I mean, it's all, you saw Breaking Bad. It's like you have to fucking make that shit in a lab and it's like a 12-person job and it's why those houses blow up and it's why people, like, it's basically you're cooking a variety of chemicals together into some form of something special.
And do you inject it?
I think you can snort it. I think you can inject it. Snort it, inject it. I know that there's other ways. Smoke it.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can do, like, the same things that people do with, like, heroin, basically. And the reason why meth is so scary is because it's just, like, this – it's just one of those things that, like, people can also hide for a really long time. Like,
yeah.
You always hear those 2020 stories about the moms that, like, sprinkle meth into their coffee or whatever. And it's just, like – it's – yeah, it's a suburban mom thing.
Yeah.
And, like, that – I believe to be true. And by the time you figure it out, like when you see those websites like Faces of Meth or whatever, like by the time, it seems to me that by the time you figure it out for a lot of people, they're so far gone that it's not the obvious things. Like they have a fucking crater missing from their face
yeah.
or they are toothless. Like they're just gone.
Yeah.
And that's really sad.
It's so sad.
Well, you guys, thank you for joining us for this Patreon episode.
And thank you for joining Neve Campbell on her ever continuing acting journey. I'm just so thankful when she chooses projects because she's fun.
I agree with you. And you guys, I will tell you, I'm glad that we did this movie for Patreon. This is the perfect type of movie for Patreon for me because I feel like if I was sentenced to this for a 3-hour episode, it would be a little bit tough.
Yeah.
But it's great to have this on the, because I know that so many of you guys out there actually really love this movie. It's great to have this on the podcast on Patreon with Max in particular, who's such a great guest and who knew like tidbits like this was a backdoor pilot.
Yeah.
How did you find that out?
Well, you know, one of my like, you know, when you go on the Wikipedia deep dives,
yeah.
Neve Campbell is always someone I'm always checking up on, seeing what she, you know, she was in that Skyscraper with The Rock this summer and got back on Fallon. So I was happy for
her. Was she an ingenue in that?
She
or
was his
she...
wife.
Oh, okay.
But
that's
she
great.
Seemed like a badass wife, you know, and she was on House of Cards for a
Neve
while.
Neve Campbell playing The Rock's wife, honey. That's great.
That's good. I mean, that's really good for him. He should be so lucky.
But also, like, that's – let's just be real.
No, that's, like, a good – that's a nice check.
For a woman who is not commonly – not to call her an older woman. For a woman who's not commonly on screen to play opposite The Rock.
And play, I think, the only female role in a movie, that's big good.
Yeah. Anyone in – I think any woman in Hollywood would, like, even just jokingly in an interview but actually in a real life – want to play The Rock's wife. They'd be like, oh, The Rock's wife. It's like just a bit.
Yeah, and it got some nice, good action. But, I mean, you know, she's got kids and she'll have – I'm sure she has the Scream money and the Party of Five money.
What's the deal with the kids?
She has two, I think.
With whom?
No one special. I mean, no one special to us. I'm sure he's special to her.
Is she married?
Yeah. I think, or she has a long-term partner.
That's great.
I think he might be British or Canadian or both.
Yeah, I think that she probably is – sorry, I just burped. It was, like, really loud inside my head. I think that she did probably get some good money from the Scream stuff. I wonder – she was a big name for the franchise at the time because Party of Five was so huge.
Yeah.
And what were some of her other biggest hits around that time? Because so she had a few
– 54 with Ryan Phillippe. Remember, she's the soap actress he falls in love with.
Okay.
She's in Drowning Mona with Bette Midler. She's in my personal favorite movie she ever did was The Company. It's a Robert Altman movie where she plays the ballet dancer. Because Neve Campbell trained as a dancer.
She does have that very, like, her face is very slight. Like, she has that very, like, pretty, she has a very, almost like Natalie Portman, like, look. Where she has that pretty, slight little face where it's just, like, you have that perfect acting face. But it's here nor there. Like, there's nothing distinguishable, which is, I always like in an actress because... Like a Rachel McAdams, it's like you just put a new hair color on that, and that's a different person.
That's
and if
great.
The acting is there, then it all – it's like you have a full fucking career.
Do you remember The Witches – The Craft? Neve Campbell's first movie, I think, was The Craft.
So then there you go. So like – so because I was sitting here wondering to myself, yes, I think Scream, she probably did well on that, especially if she had back end. Which I would assume,
by the last one or two, I'm sure she did.
Well, by Scream 2, she definitely did. Because Scream 1 was a monster.
Yeah. And then 2 was huge, too.
And then to get her back for 4.
Oh, my God. And Wild Things. Her bet Wild with Denise
So she
Richards.
Has some, like, she has some good, you know, her toes in the sand in a really good way. But even some, like, you know, even some people, I think Jennifer Love Hewitt has probably done very, very well in her life, but she's also had probably a better career in a lot of ways than a Neve Campbell. And I do wonder, like, is she set for life?
Well, like, I feel like I would say Jennifer Love Hewitt's more set for life because not after Party of Five, she had Ghost Whisperer for 5 or 6 years.
No, Jennifer Love Hewitt for sure is better set for life because she had also...
She had Client List.
While You Were Sleeping. She also had Can't Hardly Wait. She also had... Jennifer Love Hewitt has had a huge fucking career, but I would say that
they are
probably...
And Criminal Minds.
Right.
She's got that TV money, which is solid. I feel like, you know, you're on a show for a couple of years. You can make a nice little
I'm going to look up Neve Campbell's, because it's hard to tell, because also Jennifer Love Hewitt had the music career.
Been naked and I can't take it. I'm not feeling anymore.
Yeah, and also she was in the LFO video.
Enrique Iglesias video. I can be your hero, baby.
No, that's Anna Kournikova.
No, that's – isn't it Jennifer Love Hewitt where he crashes the car?
No, because they dated for years. Anna Kournikova
– But she's in it, or Enrique Iglesias.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on. Enrique Iglesias on –
And you know the my Enrique favorite – oh, and Jennifer Love Hewitt, Heartbreakers.
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Heartbreakers. Underrated her and Sigourney.
Heartbreakers. Yeah, I know you talk about this, but like I don't think that America
is ready for
feels
it.
That way about it.
I just thought it was so clever. I love Sigourney in that, and Jennifer Love was so fun, and Jason Lee, who I'm usually not much for, was cute.
I agree with you that there's like I think that I said this to you the other day. I feel like America has to have its moment with Heartbreakers, which was critically panned at the time and not really loved in the box office. I think that it needs to have its resurgence moment the way that something like Jennifer's Body is having now. Yeah. To put it generously, the way that First Wives Club is having it now, I don't think it will have that moment because that is such an iconic film.
Yeah.
But I do think that Heartbreakers, people need to make way for it in their heart because it was a great movie and people just aren't remembering it. It was one of those things that it just kind of got – I remember it being massively critically panned at the box office, which sucked because I wanted Jennifer Love Hewitt to have any win she could.
Any win.
I loved Can't Hardly Wait. I loved Party of Five.
I still know what you did last summer.
I loved her. Yes, I loved her in all the I Know What You Did Last Summer movies. And she was really having that moment that Sarah Michelle Gellar was having, but I never really cared about Buffy. So I remember really rooting for her to have this great movie, but it just didn't like line up. And I think it was really critically panned, and I'd love to see it go through the same treatment that sort of Jennifer's Body just went through, where people are realizing that it was much further ahead of its time than it ever was. And now it's having this great, I mean, I feel like we're probably closer to a Jennifer's Body remake than we are to Heartbreakers some ways. So we got to push this forward. This will be our movement. Let's get this going, Nacho experts. Let's get Heartbreakers back on the charts.
Yeah.
Let's get it back in the media's eye and on America's mind.
Yeah. Sigourney.
I'm going to really look up, really quickly look up Neve Campbell's filmography. Net worth.
Yeah.
Know her net worth.
Oh, yeah. Do you trust those, that Google search network?
No, it's always wrong. I always mentally round up and down 10 mil.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like I give it like a, I give a 5 to 10 mil. I give it like a 5 mil buffer, like up or down.
So if someone says they have 7 million, you would really think they have what, 2?
No, if someone says they have 7 million, I would think they have anywhere from 3 to 10.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Like it's just like sort of a little like mental scale. So Neve Campbell's worth 10 million, according to this, I would assume to me that means like she's worth 5 to 15. And that's also like these
Is that
people,
with like assets and money in the bank?
Well, no, like this is literally, these are these people making guesstimates.
Yeah.
Like there's no one reports what Neve Campbell made in interest. No one's recording what she made in interest on her Morgan Stanley account. Like no one knows what apartment building in Arizona she's renting out, which by the way is what all the smart people in this building.
Yeah, don't they buy businesses out of state?
Is it? It's to buy units. Everyone always says buy units.
That Can I ask why buy units?
Because it's the easiest turnover money. Like if I were to go, so in a weird way, like I almost in a weird way, I've thought about like lately. I'm like, should I just like sell my house, buy a condo in LA, and then take that extra like $250,000 and buy like a 16-unit apartment building in Arizona?
Or storage? You know what I've always wanted to be?
No. Storage. But the reason why to go for units is because there's a monthly turnover. Mm. You get that year down.
Yeah.
Okay. Like any sort of like thing, it's a guaranteed. If you fill 16 units at a certain rate, and then you raise it every year, and then if people leave, you started them at a new rate. And like it's a very, very smart business to be in because it's like you automatically get that mortgage paid for that space every single month. What were you going to say about storage units?
I've always had a dream if I ever made enough money. I want, because I know plenty of people who've invested in storage units. You know those like they'll do 40 or 50 or 60 or even a couple hundred.
Yeah.
And they're always full. And they're the easiest things to maintain. Like just those stowed because people have
right,
shit.
Right. You don't
a bunch
have to like
put that. And I've always wanted to pick a pine. I've always wanted to pick a pine at Christmas time.
Like Christmas
where
trees.
Where people go and cut their trees down because that's something year in, year out.
Yeah.
People make money, make room in their budgets.
Holiday money is not a joke. Like
I would love to get in Halloween
probably
money.
3 weeks in, I spent 2 weeks in Ocean City, Maryland with my ex. And like, I will tell you, that like those people make all of their money in 3 months of the year, and then the rest of the year is just like Jamaican vacay. Like they are, and they have a blast during the summer. It's like, you know, you're drinking like boozy slushies at like 1 p.m.
Yeah.
And you shut down your like airbrush station or your peanut shop at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
And then you're just out. But like you've had a whole day of selling airbrush t-shirts or peanuts or fucking whatever it is you do on the stand, t-shirts, whatever. And then you go live your life and you make hundreds of bucks every single day, which for those rent prices that they have there is very, very little.
Oh yeah.
And it's a really, really great thing. And so basically I think those seasonal things are great for making money. I feel like that's also like nuanced investing. Like, I feel like you got to start with something like, okay, I got 18 units out in Arizona. And then you're like, okay, but now I bought a land that's technically like a Christmas tree farm in like Gainesville, Texas. And then people go in and cut down their trees or like I've opened up a little like seaside shop or whatever. But those
would,
are like those.
Would you ever want a franchise, like a Subway franchise?
Apparently, like, okay, so I had a friend from college who put a bunch of money into buying Dunkin' Donuts out in LA. because we're from Mass. We're both from Massachusetts. And before they came to LA, like officially, he bought like five franchise opportunities so that when as soon as LA was ready to clear the market, they would have five. And like, I'm pretty sure that that guy's set for life.
Yeah.
And another like huge, huge moneymaker is like a 7-Eleven, which obviously like that's, you know, in our culture of like how many people come to this country and start 7-Eleven or how like those are so often run by people that like, honestly, your average American outside in most major cities, especially coastal cities, don't think, oh, like I'm a fucking white guy. I should buy a 7-Eleven, which maybe is probably the best way. Mm. But like most of the like, you know, big chain stores that are owned by people that I know of or like Domino's that are owned by like, you know, a white guy that owns like 150 Domino's or like some guy in the middle of the country. Or it's like a family that owns one 7-Eleven and like they've literally built up their whole family. They're going to be set for life because of this 7-Eleven, but it was just them investing on one. It's so interesting to see how people do these franchises.
Oh, yeah.
You know, would you ever want to do one?
You know, unlike the storage units, the problem with a franchise, and this is like with business in general, do you really want to be responsible for all the additional, you know, if you own a storage unit, it's like you hire two people, like security.
Well, to that I was going to say, actually, even when you mentioned this, because like right away, my thought that went to the storage unit was like, at least if it's a home, you would hope that that person is like keeping a monochrome of like decency about their space. But with storage units, I mean, there's a reason why it's called Storage Wars or like a reason why whatever. It's like it is a very thuggy area. Like it can turn into really bad shit fast. Like people leaving stuff behind.
Yeah.
People basically creating a crime scene. And like, yes, you can wipe your hands clean legally as an owner at a certain point for sure. But I feel like almost in a weird way, it's like, I don't know.
What about a car wash?
I mean, that's what they did on Breaking Bad.
Oh, is that what they did?
Yeah. I mean, on Breaking Bad, like the whole situation took place around like he started off working as a teacher that was like part-time at a car wash.
Oh.
Which, by the way, all teachers have at least two or three jobs in America. And oh. I don't know when this will go up right now, but I will say to all people in the LAUSD, like I'm right here for you. I support you. I am a family. I'm from a family of all teachers. My Aunt Mary has taught for Boston school districts for 35 years. Amazing, amazing teacher. And my grandmother was a teacher. My grandfather was a professor. I fucking love teachers. They are the most crucial, essential people to our society. And I'm with you right now, no matter where you are, if you're in it or on the other side of it, God bless you. And if you want to drop off 35 to 50 kids a day in my house, I think that I'd be willing to take that on right now.
Yeah.
This seems like something I could do.
You Uncle
Max
it.
Will come over and,
yeah, and Wags.
Craft and oh, Wags will be in the mix.
Interpretive fucking dance.
No, Wags will get me sued if I'm babysitting 50 toddlers in my basement. But you guys, I love you so much.
Love you
God
guys.
Bless. We're gonna wrap
thank
this up.
Thank you so much for having me, my queen.
Yes, thank you. I love you so much. I gotta go to bed.
Love
night
you.
Night. Bye, you guys.
Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to season 4 of Mother May I Sleep With podcast.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.